Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to African American Empowerment 365 Days of Motivation and Personal Empowerment just for you. I'm your main man, Marvin Rohn, got Brother George and Dr. Bruce. Today we're going to be talking about where are our minds. We got Dr. Bruce super live today. We got Willie Lynch, Kwanzaa, and so much more. So just hang on in there, brothers and sisters. So we'd like to start with the tenets of the NAAEA, and that is the pillars of what we do to empower African Americans here in America and abroad. So let me spell it out for you. We're spelling peace today because you need peace in your life, peace of mind, but you also need a concept and a direction that we can navigate our way around this system that has held us captive for over 400 years. It's now time for us to take our rightful place as positive, peaceful, and productive people of the world. So let's spell peace together. P, political. As African Americans in this country, we need a political agenda. That political agenda must look at how we can use the political system to get the resources that we need. In any locality or any state or any town that we live in, we must understand politics. But that is understanding the law, understanding the system in which we live in. Because if we can understand the system of what it is that we're operating in, then we can navigate it very well. Next is economics. You have to understand the economic system and the system of capitalism and how it works, how money management works, how the dollar works, and how to save it, how to earn it, how to keep it, and how to wisely spend it. And that would be on institutions that define who we are. It's also a very, very important aspect of building institutions that define our own reality. And we're going to have to do that by understanding how the economic system works. And now my favorite one, the A. You got to get your A together. Athletics, health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. You got to push away from the table, stop eating all those snacks and treats, and get to taking care of your body. Got to take care of your mind as well. We're talking about mental health, physical health, emotional health, and spiritual health. It's being well-rounded. We got to get ourselves together because you can't take care of yourself when you're sick. You can't change the world if you are not healthy. And as African-Americans on this planet, we're the sickest group in the world. See where you fall in line at. And so we're going to have to do the job of taking care of our health, eating better, eating for our bodies, right? The types of foods that we eat will reflect the type of health that we have. Next is C, relevant, don't be mad with me, relevant cultural programs like this one that really teach you how to be proud of who you are, right? All of those old ways of talking about us and making fun of us and all of that is over with. Now it's time to move on. It's time to get better and stronger. And whatever we see, we like. Whatever we like, we love. And we're going to have to learn how to love ourselves again. Getting rid of all the stereotypes and moving forward with being the great, beautiful black people that we are. And lastly, it's education. It's a comprehensive education that really looks at how we can become well-rounded, well-adjusted, that we can begin to perform again at the highest level, the same as our ancestors used to. That is the elements of the NAEA and the pillars of the peace concept. Go out and join us at the NAEA, NAEA.weebly.com. And we're going to have to continue to produce the positive things that's going to help us become the best people that we can be today and every day. Again, it's African American Empowerment Saturday. Welcome to the show. And now it's time for the Stan Macklin moment. Be right back.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing. But we must unify. And don't, let's not sabotage ourselves. We should not look as to what we can't do. We can do all things. We can. We can do it. And so we got to quit trying to mimic other races and be who we are, original kings and queens, and make a difference.
I like that.
Right here on earth.
Brother Stan is so right. Let's make a difference. Let's stop trying to get in and fit in, but become the best people that we can be. It's up to us now. No one can do it for us. We got to do it for ourselves. And we have to continue to work on ourselves day and night to become the best people that we can be. And now for my favorite segment, it's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Y'all know how I'm bringing them in. Rock with me, y'all. Come on here. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Come on, Brother George. Do it. Come on, Cass.
Bring it. What?
What? Hey, Mom.
Anywhere.
I ain't going nowhere.
Right,
just getting better.
Here.
Come on, rock it out. Brother George. Come on in here. Brother George, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, brother. And thank you very much. Man. Thank you for the introduction and DMX.
I saw you rocking with me, brother. What you got for us today?
Well, today's Kwanzaa principle is NIA, which is purpose. To make as our collective vocation the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. I love it. NIA. Purpose. The act of being responsible demonstrates that a person is committed to a certain standard of behavior. Through commitment to an ideal, to a goal, to a positive, ongoing relationship with someone or something, we find our purpose in life and begin to fulfill our human potential. And I think that's where we are right now as a people. You know, we are slowly finding out what our purpose is here on this planet that we exist in. And I really believe that our people are, you know, going through a shift right now. Now, with Willie Lynch, I'm going to go back to a book that I spoke about, I think it was no more than about a month ago. But it's called Great African Thinkers, and it's on Sheikh Anta Diop. They call him the Pharaoh. And this book is edited by Ivan Van Sertima, who is another of our great African thinkers. And he took the time to put this together, you know, in honor of Sheikh Anta Diop. Now, a part of the book, Sheikh Anta Diop is being interviewed by Finch. And Finch is another, he was a little younger than Diop and Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. But he's interviewing Dr. Diop. And he says, he asked me the question, can you explain your two cradle theory, the northern cradle and the southern cradle? And Diop responds, at this point in time, sociology was promoting a theory that black culture was inferior to Western culture, inferior in fact to all cultures. Even the more advanced sociologists subscribe to this concept. For example, the matriarchal family with the spirit of the mother dominating was considered inferior to other cultures. However, when we study the different cultures and trace them back to their cradle, we see that this is ridiculous, and that is why I had to study the whole of African culture in the African cradle and study the first time with a new penetration and precision that which the European had not given to us, knowledge of the West. I believe that it is only through this continued effort of comparison and study that proper light can be shed on the primary social structures of humanity. So he did that study because they were essentially writing, like, it seems like the whole time off of the top of their heads. They didn't use a lot of scientific research when they made comparisons with Africa, because there were so many contradictions that were around to challenge what it was they were saying. They were just looking for some scientific-minded whites that would challenge the idea of this superior culture that existed in Africa. And so Sheikh Anta Diop took on the challenge of making comparisons. And so that's what this book is centered around, you know, plus his other works that he's done, like Civilization or Barbarism, and I can't recall off the top of my head his other book, but you know, That's Dr. Shekhan Tadir, and I think he gave a great answer. And I think that we need to really study his work, because he made it possible for us to stand up and take, you know, our proper place in human civilization and in development of it. So, Brother Marvin, it's back to you, brother. We got Dr. Bruce on the line today, so.
Got him on the line. All right. Thank you, Brother George. Great segment.
Yes,
and now, before we go into Dr. Bruce, we got to ask you the empowerment question of the week. Talked about comparisons between where we were and where we are now. What do we need to do to take that step, that next step, as African Americans, to get back to the great height in which we used to stand?
Well, I think I get the same answer every time. We have to
keep on saying.
We have to get back to our young people. Our very young people, like our young children, you know, starting at like 3 or 4 years old, and put them in a course of learning about who we are as a people, starting that early, because it seems like it's something that gets to them by the time they're 10 or 11 years old, that discourages them from learning, discourages them from being disciplined and having an idea of what they would like to be one day in life. And I think that if we were able to get to them much sooner, that we could plant that seed in their mind that will begin to develop and flourish, even if they don't teach Black history in the schools. I don't care. We can teach it at home. So that's not even, I don't even worry about those kind of stupid things that a racist white want to do, you know. And it's really just out of a fear of what we have accomplished as a people, that they just can't face it. But we're going to have to get that into our very young children, so that they don't get to that age of 13 or 14 and be so discouraged that they join on to groups that, you know, I mean, we're just trying to be loved by somebody, you know. And so I was in a gang, so I know what the gang can be, you know, but they don't initially join it to kill each other. But that's what happens as a result. So we need to do something to put them on a different path where they wound up, you know, in a situation where they can nourish, you know, themselves and our people in representing ourselves in the world as a serious-minded people. So that's my answer, brother.
Thank you, Brother George. Great, great, great point. If we don't do it, who's going to do it? If you don't teach yourself and you don't teach your children, who's going to do it? And if you know it's not going to be done and it's not going to be done properly by those who are not really interested in your growth, then why are you letting them do it? It's not time for us to be arguing and fussing about how it's going to be done. We need to be arguing and fussing with ourselves about what needs to be done, and then get on the same page and begin to start doing it. If you don't do it, who's going to do it? 845-277-9250 is the call-in line today. 845-277-9250. We got the talented and educated, smart Dr. Bruce coming up in just a minute. Again, 845-277-9250 is the number. The call, the question is today, where is our minds? Being said, let's bring them on in. Oh, yeah. Please. Bring it, brother.
Bring it!
Talk Dr. Bruce Bridges.
Yes, sir, Brother Marvin.
Welcome to the show, brother. How are you?
I'm all right, my brother. I'm all right, my brothers. Matter of fact, I was just texting you, texting your number to a new listener. That's why I hesitated for a minute. You know, I'm always texting your number. I also got us a new listener calling in from Toronto, Canada. He's probably on right now.
All right.
Yeah, from Toronto, Canada. He's probably on right now.
To the show. International.
Yeah, brother. Matter of fact, his name is Brother Norman.
Mama,
Brother Norman. And Brother Norman does a talk show, too. And maybe when we get to questions and answers, if you get to him, he can tell the people about his show. He does a good show tomorrow, and I'm going to be on for about 10 minutes on his show tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect. And I think he called in. He said, I just got through speaking with him. He said, I'm calling right now. I think it's a 617 number, I believe, his number.
Okay.
But,
all right.
So always trying to build listenership, brother.
I appreciate that, Dr. Bruce. So let me ask you a question, because the topic of today is, where are our minds? We just passed Juneteenth, right? And we're headed toward the 4th of July, which is a couple of days ahead of us. So how should we be thinking, and what should we be doing around this time of the year to develop ourselves and to continue to grow as African Americans in America?
Okay. I think, Brother Marvin, I'm going to get to that, if you don't mind, when I want to turn back into telling our story, if you don't mind, and I'll bring that right on back in a couple of minutes. If I can start with telling our story after I left Cincinnati, Ohio, and came back and started to teach at North Carolina Central University. Because the question you're asking me now is a question that relates to my teaching career at a historically black college. So if you don't mind, if we do it that way, is that okay with you?
You go right ahead, sir. This is your show.
All right, I know it's not my show, but anyway. Yeah, we have been doing a series called Telling Our Story, and I'll definitely get to your question, though, because it ties right in. After leaving graduate school at the University of Cincinnati, I went back to North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, and began teaching at North Carolina Central University. And during my tenure at North Carolina Central University, I always tried to bring in information that would uplift black students or black people who are taking my courses. And that's one thing I would always do. Whenever there was a holiday that came along, I would always try to incorporate the history of that holiday, its origins, its development into my course material. And I would always try to fit it in. Sometimes I would fit it in with the course material, but sometimes I would just put it in if it just happened to have been on that day, because I was teaching in the geography department at North Carolina Central University. And whenever this time of the year came around, July the 4th, if it happened to have been on a day that my class met, or if it was sometime during that week, I would always talk about it. And the point I would always make, which is leading us into the answer to the question that you asked me, the point that I would always make is for us as a people to try to understand where we are and who we are and where we stand in the struggle for our mental development. And what I would always do is ask the question, July 4th, 1776. Let's look at the dates. Let's look at the facts. Let's look at the history. Let's look at it in context. July 4th, 1776 is the birth date of America, when America became independent from the British. The British colonizers who had set up colonies in America along the east coast of this country fought in the war for independence in America. And most black people during that particular time, 1776, were on the plantations. We were on the plantations in Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, Arkansas. We were on the plantations. picking cotton and tobacco, in some places indigo. And so we as a people were not independent during that particular time in the history of this country. So when you, and this also answers, Brother Marvin, your question about the importance of history and why history is important. When you understand history or what happened in the past, you can also understand what's going on today. So when we know that in 1776, Juneteenth had not occurred, I'm tying all this in also with the Juneteenth celebrations that were held throughout the country about a week ago. Juneteenth was a holiday that came to be out of black people, Native Americans in Galveston, Texas, who were black indigenous people, which we won't get into all that right now, but who were becoming free in Texas. And, of course, we need to remember three dates in talking about Juneteenth. We need to remember the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863. We also have to remember 1865, June 19th, and we also have to remember December 6th, 1865, when the 14th Amendment was ratified and slavery was ultimately ended and abolished. Those three dates are very important. But all of this was about 100 years after America became independent from England. So it is not for us as people to celebrate with white America on her holiday when we were on the plantation. So before you light that match, before you open that book of matches to throw it on top of those coals in your outside grill and to put your steak and pork ribs on the grill, think about, as Bob Marley said, who you are and where you stand in the struggle. So this is why your podcast is so important, because when our people begin to learn, then we will know how to conduct ourselves. That's not to disrespect anybody and their holiday or whatever you want to do, but know who you are and where you stand in the struggle. And it also leads me to a speech that I'm going to ask our listeners to read on their own when they get a chance, by Frederick Douglass, called "What to the Slave is the 4th of July." And Frederick Douglass, in 1852 at Corinthian Hall in Rochester, New York, was invited to speak by the Ladies' Anti-Slavery Movement of Rochester, New York. And he was invited to speak, and he spoke on the 5th of July, but it was about the 4th of July. And in that particular speech, he talked about the hypocrisies and the complex issues that black people had to deal with in this country during the time of the 4th of July. And he says clearly in his speech, "What to the Slave is the 4th of July," that we should not celebrate the 4th of July because he said that it's not our holiday. So, Brother Marvin, I hope that kind of answers your question. I'm going to give it back to you for a minute, but I hope that kind of answers your question. If not, I'll continue on with it.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. And that's what we need to know, right? Frederick Douglass knew exactly what was going on. So enlighten us on how he saw things and then how we can use that information to move forward.
That's right. And, and as you said, too, once we get that kind of information, we can move forward. And just to give it an idea of what I mean about not really understanding, when I presented my 4th of July speech about a week ago in a little small town outside of Durham called Graham, North Carolina, the young brother who came on before me, who was an excellent saxophone player, played a good tune, and he didn't mention Juneteenth at all. He just talked about Father's Day, which was fine, but let's understand that also is has been defined by other people for us. The days that we celebrate our fathers, the days that we celebrate our mothers, the day that we celebrate our other holidays in this country, Halloween, all these holidays, these are holidays that have been designated by white America, and most of them, all of them, 90% of them, are holidays that capitalism uses to take advantage of black people. And I even noticed that on this year, when you go into a Walmart and go into some of the other stores, you will find that they're beginning to have red. Red is an important color during Juneteenth because of the color of the blood that was shed by black people on the plantations of America and throughout our struggles in America. So they're beginning to sell drinks that are made with the color of red and to use those colors of red and to make T-shirts and just to profit on our holidays and on our traditions and to profit on our culture, you see. And that's something that we should, as much as possible, not let happen. Of course, we can't stop it, but we don't have to participate in it. But we at least can understand that white America never gives us anything that they themselves cannot benefit from. But I noticed that. So the brother who came on before me and before I spoke, he talked about Father's Day, but he didn't even mention Juneteenth. I don't think the people, they even knew that they were celebrating a Juneteenth celebration because it was on the same day as America has designated as Father's Day. So you see here that even the Martin Luther King holiday, if we begin to analyze it, it changes every year. Sometimes it's on his birthday, which is January 15th. Sometimes it's not. So we as people have to understand our history and to put things into their proper place. And then I understand that some people had Juneteenth the week before Juneteenth. So we get all mixed up. We get confused, you see. So we really have to study, as they say in the scriptures, to make ourselves approved. I think it goes that way. So I do have, and if you don't mind, Brother Marvin, I want to take a few minutes to just, and some people may want to pull that speech up by Frederick Douglass, just to let you all hear some points that I've highlighted in that speech by Frederick Douglass that was made at Corinthian Hall, July 5th, 1852. He starts off by saying,
"Go right ahead,
Mr. President." Pardon me?
Go right ahead. Take your time.
Okay, good. All right. Thank you, Brother Marvin. He says, "Mr. President, friends and fellow citizens, he who could address this audience without a quelling sensation has stronger nerves than I have. I do not remember ever to have appeared as a speaker before any assembly more shriekingly nor with greater distrust of my ability than I do this day. A feeling has crept over me, quite unfavorable to the exercise of my limited powers of speech. The task before me is one which requires much previous thought and study for its proper performance. I know that apologies of this sort are generally considered flat and unmeaning. I trust, however, that mine will not be so considered. Should I seem at ease, my appearance would much misrepresent me. The little experience I have had in addressing public meetings in country schoolhouses avails me nothing on the present occasion. The papers and placards say that I am to delve a 4th of July oration. This certainly sounds large and out of the common way, for it is true that I have often had the privilege to speak in this beautiful hall and to address many who now honor me with their presence. But neither their familiar faces nor the perfect gaze I think I have at Corinthian Hall seems to free me from embarrassment." He says, "The fact is," and this is when he really gets into it, brothers and sisters, and to those who are tuned in today to the National African American Empowerment Program, "the fact is, ladies and gentlemen, the distance between this platform and the slave plantation from which I escaped is considerable, and the difficulties to be overcome in getting from the latter to the former are by no means slight. That I am here today is to me a matter of astonishment as well as of gratitude. You will not, therefore, be surprised if in what I have to say I evince no elaborate preparation nor grace my speech with any high-sounding exordium. With little experience and with less learning, I have been able to throw my thoughts hastily and imperfectly together and trusting to your patient and generous indulgence, I will proceed to lay them before you. This, for the purpose of this celebration, is the 4th of July. It is the birthday of your national independence and your political freedom. This to you is what the Passover was to the emancipated people of God. It carries your minds back to the day and to the act of your great deliverance and to the signs and to the wonders associated with that act and that day. The celebration also marks the beginning of another year of your national life and reminds you that the Republic of America is now 76 years old. And I'm glad, fellow citizens, that your nation... years and 10 to the allotted time for individual men, but nations number their years by thousands. According to this fact, you are even now only in the beginning of your national career, still lingering in the period of childhood. I repeat, I'm glad this is so. This is hope in the thought, and hope is much needed under the dark clouds which lower above the horizon. The eye of the reformer is met with angry flashes portending disastrous times, but his heart may well beat lighter at the thought that America is young. So I'm going to just pause here for a minute. He's talking about the age of America and how America is celebrating her independence, and he goes on to start talking about what this means to us, and it's a fairly long speech, but I did just want to mention a couple of minutes, Brother Marvin, of the speech, and he says he calls it a sham. He says this for me to be invited here is really a sham. He said this 4th of July celebration is your holiday. It is not my holiday. And this is what Frederick Douglass said many years ago. And I'm tying this into telling our stories that we talked about earlier on in the program, and these are the kinds of things that I would speak about in my classes. But oftentimes, and even more so, I find on black college campuses than on white college campuses, black professors who proceed to enlighten and who proceed to make their students aware of current events and what actually relates to them, oftentimes we are chastised. I'll never forget how I was called in by my chairman because he said I was teaching too much by trying to give up information about our culture and our heritage as I would on the 4th of July, as I'm doing on your program right now today. And as another example, I remember when I was teaching a course in physical geography, as we are telling our story, when I was a member of the faculty at North Carolina Central University, I was discussing the geographical concept of rotation, revolution, and what we call galactic motion or the movements of Earth. And in so discussing the three motions of the Earth or the Earth and its movements around the sun and throughout the galaxy, it was around the part of the year that students were about to go home for the Christmas break. So having just seen Alex Haley's roots and understanding roots and beginning to question a lot of the things that we had been taught, I said, this is a good place, since I'm talking about the Earth as it rotates around the sun and causing day and night, and as it revolves around the sun at the same time, causing years to take place, this is a good time to talk about December 25th, so-called birthdate of Jesus Christ. So I asked the students in the class, I said, you all are about to get out of school in a week or so to celebrate Christmas. Do you know where the December 25th birthday came from? Do you know how many times it's mentioned in the Bible? Are you familiar with the origins of it? Do you know anything about it at all? And they said, no, we don't. I said, but yet we're going to go home, because many of the students were from small towns in North Carolina and other parts of the country. You're going to go home and celebrate December 25th, and you really don't know where it came from. So then I went into the origin of the 25th birth date and how that's really the birth date, which it is, the birth date of the sun in the sky, the S-U-N sun, which was changed to the S-O-N sun. It's really the birth date of the sun in the sky. And I talked about how people at the Council of Nicaea in 325 A.D. came up with this date to coincide and to give it the birth date of the man called Jesus, but it really was the birth date of the sun, because December 21st, the days began to get noticeably longer, and on December 21st, people began to, at the time of the winter solstice, which is a word that means sun standing still, the winter solstice. The word solstice comes from two Latin words, sol, which means sun, and sistera, sol, S-O-L, and stis comes from the word sistera, C-I-S-T-E-R-A, which means to stand still. It appears that at this time of the year, the sun is standing still, because if we notice, to those who are tuned in to the podcast this afternoon, the sun, during the wintertime, the days are very, very short. It gets dark early, and the nights are long. So it appears that when the sun goes down at night, it's standing still, and that is never going to rise the next morning. So people in ancient times, in missing this, 3 or 4 days later, the days began to get noticeably longer around December 25th. They get noticeably longer, and so people would say what? The sun is born. They would worship the rising of the sun. They would worship the resurrection of the sun from its night of darkness into daylight. And so they would say the sun is born. So that's really where the December 25th birth date came from. But when we don't understand history, and we don't understand science, and we don't understand mathematics, then people can get over on us in any way that they possibly can. But when we understand science and mathematics and history and engineering and have an understanding of some of these things, and then we can begin to analyze many of the holidays that white America have given to us, and these holidays that we celebrate are not really our holidays, but they're holidays that are based in pagan origins that happened to us in our past. But when we don't understand history, we don't know that, you see. So these are the kinds of points I would always like to make. Frederick Douglass says, he said, "Would to God, both for your sakes and ours, that an affirmative answer could be truthfully returned to these questions. What to the slave is the 4th of July? We're still on your plantations. We're still celebrating your day." And he says that this day, he says that the sunlight that brought life and healing to you has brought stripes and death to me. This 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice. I must mourn. To drag a man to fetters into the grand illuminated temple of liberty and call upon him to join you in joyous anthems where inhuman mockery and sacrilegious irony. Do you mean, citizens, to mock me by asking me to speak today? If so, there is a parallel to your conduct, and let me warn you that it is dangerous to copy the example of a nation whose crimes, luring up to heaven, were thrown down by the breath. They were thrown down by the breath of humanity. And then he goes on, as I'm just kind of paraphrasing. Who is so stolid and selfish that would not give his voice to swell the hallelujahs of a nation's jubilee when the chains of servitude had been from his limbs. I am not that man. In a case like that, the dumb might eloquently speak, and the lame man leap as in heart. But such is not the state of this case. I say it with a sad sense of disparity between us. I am not included within the pale of this glorious anniversary. Your high independence only reveals the immeasurable distance between us. The blessings in which you have this day and rejoice are not enjoyed in common. The rich inheritance of justice, liberty, prosperity, and independence bequeathed by your fathers is shared by you, not by me. So he goes on to just make it clear, brothers and sisters, and this was in 1852, and this is what, about maybe, I'm just guessing, 150 years earlier. It just lets you know that Frederick Douglass was even more aware then than we are today, much more aware than we are today. And he says, I'm not rejoicing. He said, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there, they that carried us away captive required of us a song. And they who wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her coming. So just wanted to read a little bit of the speech by the about the 4th of July. And those of you who are listening, I'm not going to read the whole thing. You can read it on your own. And it's easy to pull up online. But one thing he says at the end of it, which I always like to quote, he always says at the end, those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are like men who want the crops but who don't want to plow the fields. They're like men who want the rain and women who want the rain but don't want the thunder and lightning. He says, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. You may not get all that you pay for in this world, but you will certainly pay for all that you get. So, Brother Marvin, I'm going to give it back to you. And Brother George, and want to just share people with that speech since the 4th of July is coming up, and I want to tie it in with telling our story, and this has always been a part of my story, and I will never forget after I did the lecture about Christmas to my class, I was called into the office by my chairperson, and I knew it was something very serious because I walked in the door and sat in front of his desk, and he said, get up, close the door behind you. I said, oh, something's going to happen here now. And what was happening, Brother Marvin, I closed the door and sat back down. He said, one of your students just came into my office and was very upset. I said, about what? As if I didn't know. But he said, she said that you said that Christmas was a European holiday started by Europeans and that European people taught it to their slaves on the plantations, and slaves continue to celebrate it today, but it comes from our memory of Plantation Day. Did you say that? And I said to him, I said, yes, sir, yes, sir. And then I even went into it further. I said, yes, sir, and moreover, so-and-so-and-so-and-so. And it relates to geography because it has nothing to do with the 25th birthday, but that's the winter solstice. So I went into it even deeper with him. And I'll never forget, he shook his head, not north and south in the affirmative or in agreement, but he shook his head east and west. He said, you are teaching too much. And I will never forget, Brother Marvin, that occurred in, like I said, in December, just before the Christmas holidays. I taught there the next semester and the following semester. I taught because the contracts lasted year after year. But when time came to get a contract for the very next semester of the next year, there was no contract for me. He said that our money's run out. You want soft money. We don't have any money. But I found out that what really happened was because of the fact that I was causing the students to think and to question and to not just question in my class, but what happened, which was actually upsetting the whole campus, is students, for example, will come to my class And if I were, if I happened to have been teaching about something that related to philosophy or humanities, say something dealing with Socrates or Plato or the Greek philosophers, I would talk about the Greek philosophers in my class and their philosophies, and I would then ask the students if they knew where the Greek philosophers obtained their knowledge. Most of them would not know. And then I would talk about how Socrates went to school in Egypt and saw on all the temples, man, know thyself. Thinganathi, in that particular language. He would see that on the temples. And so he went back to Greece, because Greece is just across the pond, across the Mediterranean from Egypt. And he would go back and he taught it to his Greek students using Socratic method and those kinds of things. So I would tie that in. Or I would teach about Pythagoras and the Pythagorean theorem, A squared plus B squared equals C squared. And then I would ask the students, what are you solving for when you posit A squared plus B squared equals C squared? You're solving for the length of the legs of a right triangle. I say, you're absolutely right. I say, where are the oldest triangles that we know anything about? And then they would say, Egypt, the pyramids. And then I say, aha. I said, Egypt, the pyramids, Pythagoras. Where are the pyramids? Egypt. Where's Egypt? Egypt is in Africa. And then I would go into the history of Pythagoras and talk about how Pythagoras, which he did, studied under the ancient priests of Egypt and the scholars and adepts or wise men for 22 years, according to his biographers, studied there for 22 years. And so the ancient Egyptians had to know about A squared plus B squared equals C squared if they could build those perfectly designed and constructed pyramids. So my students would then take this information and go back into a class in mathematics where they'd be discussing the Pythagorean theorem, or go back into a class in philosophy where they'd be discussing Plato and Aristotle, and they would ask the teachers, well, Professor so-and-so, where did Plato go to school? And the professor most times didn't know. And to give you an example, as I talk about my story, when I was teaching after I left NCCU, after not getting a contract for teaching the truth, because I was teaching the truth, after leaving NCCU and going to St. Augustine's College, another small black American college, much smaller than NCCU, in Raleigh, North Carolina, I started teaching there. And this is where those students would leave my classes and go to other classes and question their teachers based upon something they had heard in my classes. And oftentimes, or at least one time, a professor, a white professor, called my office one day, and he said, did you in your class teach something about Socrates having gone to school in Africa, and that Plato went to school in Africa and learned the theories that he taught, and the Garden of Academus and all? Did you teach that all this, much of this happened in Africa? I said, yes, sir, I did. He said, I've never heard that before. That's what a white professor told me. And he said it rather despairingly, and he said to me, he said, and the tone of his voice was that it was just utter nonsense. He said, I've never heard that. And then I said to him, I said that just because you haven't heard it, sir, does not mean it does not exist, because what you have not heard would probably make about 10 million more universes. So just because you have not heard it does not mean it does not exist. I said to him, go and do some studying, and then you, as you say to your students, I said, you come back to me after you do some studying. So all I'm saying, brothers and sisters, and to those who are tuned in to this weekly podcast of Brother Marvin and Brother George, on which I am a guest today, and I will be back in a few weeks, but please tune in again on next week. I just want to say to you all to always study always study and always learn, whether or not you're in school. You don't have to be in school. As a matter of fact, I'm beginning to find out that you study more and learn more, not in the traditional way of learning as you can non-traditionally. So that's been a part of my journey, Brother Marvin. I've always taught the way that I'm teaching now, and 4th of July, since that's relevant, I remember teaching on 4th of July when I taught at NCCU, taught on Christmas when I was teaching geography there. And then next time when I come back, I'll probably go into get to the point of where I opened up the first African-American bookstore in the history of Durham, North Carolina. But even prior to that, I do want to mention this before I give it back to you. I'd like to just want to mention that around 1981 or 1980, I can't remember exactly what date it is, though some of our listeners know, when Bob Marley transitioned and went back to the African ancestors, I went to the local radio station here, and this is before I had my radio talk show, which is another part of my history. I also had a very popular radio talk show in Durham, North Carolina, called the Cultural Awareness Seminar. But I'll get to that later. But before the Cultural Awareness Seminar, and before I opened the first African-American bookstore in the history of this city, Bob Marley transitioned as I was being relieved of my duties at NCCU around 1981. I went to the program director at WDUR radio station in Durham, North Carolina, and asked them if I could do a tribute to Bob Marley. And the program director in Durham, North Carolina in 1981 knew nothing about Bob Marley, hadn't heard anything of Bob Marley. He knew about the death from the news, of course. But he said, "I don't know enough to do a program on Bob Marley." I said, "Well, brother, I will produce the program, write the questions down for you to ask me, and supply the answers so that it won't look like that you don't know anything. I'll give you the questions to ask me." And so we went on, and I created the program, produced it, directed the program, and did a radio program in honor of Bob Marley. And it was supposed to be on from 1 until 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. And I was on schedule to get out at 2 o'clock afternoon because I had to go to graduation at St. Augustine's College where I had started teaching. But the program went from 1 to 3. I missed graduation because people enjoyed the program so much that they wanted me to stay on for an extra hour. And the program director enjoyed it himself. He talked about how much he learned. But the point I want to make is this, Brother Marvin, as you always say about your program, people are always learning. I talked about the origin of reggae, the word reggae, the history of reggae music, back even before Bob Marley, how it came from R&B and American, from the blues and et cetera. Talked about the history of Jamaica and the geography of the island and the population and the Arawak and the Carib connection of the indigenous people there who were black. So they learned a lot those 2 hours. And so it was from that program and from the response of that special program on radio station WDR in 1981, in 1982, I launched and produced my own talk show called the Cultural Awareness Seminar on that same station. So we're telling our history, but at the same time, we're tying in July 4th. We're making it relevant. We're tying in Juneteenth. We're making it relevant. And we're trying to recapture the African mind, which is the name of my book. We're making it all relevant. Okay, Brother Marvin.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Well done, sir. Well done. But before we get into the call line, it's a hard pill that we got to swallow, right? And you made it really clear that there's some things that we don't know. Right, we've been conditioned to learn some things in this culture that we think and believe is true. You just brought up a really, really hard truth for some of our people in reference to the birth date of Jesus, which is historically different from the one that we know and understand. With that, armed with that information, what information or knowledge or even thoughts that you would share with our people about the differences between what we've been taught and what the reality of history is?
Well, one thing is that we have to realize, and it's just a very simple quote that I'm going to give right here from Elijah Muhammad. He said many, many years ago that if a man is not going to treat you right, then he's not going to teach you right. I want to repeat that. If a man or a woman, I'm changing it, he said man, if a man, or because we want to be all inclusive here now, if a man or a woman is not going to treat you right, then you know that they're not going to teach you right. So as African people in America, from Alabama and Mississippi and Arkansas and Louisiana, North Carolina, sorry, as black people in this country, all over this country, coming from the plantations of America, we came with a plantation mentality. And basically what we brought from the plantation is what we were taught by our slave masters. And even though we left the plantation after Juneteenth and moved up to Chicago from Texas, or many of us moved out west, the migration, the patterns of migration, to California, or to Detroit, Michigan, to work in the steel mills. Even with that movement, we took the same mind that was contained in our heads on the plantations. We took that same mindset, that same way of thinking, into whatever city we migrated to, you see. So I'm trying to make this clear. So what you have here then here is a person who is free from the shackles of slavery physically, but mentally their mind is still shackled. Their mind is still enslaved. They're still connected to the plantation. In the same way that a baby is still breathing from its mother before that umbilical cord is cut, is the same way that we as people operate today. We have not gotten to the point to where we are able to breathe, quote unquote, or think, I would say, on our own, and to critically analyze and to begin to grow and to develop as a people, because we still have that slaves. And that's what I talk about in my book, Recapturing the African Mind. And as we can be given these holidays like Juneteenth, which are great, because I, like I said, I spoke at one, I was at part of the celebration and still will continue to be, but we have to keep teaching our people to get them to understand them of knowing who we are. So to answer your question, what must be done is that we have to begin to become independent researchers, independent thinkers, and independent doers, and become totally independent, and to cut the umbilical cord of the slave mentality and to stand up on our own and to recapture our own minds.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. We appreciate that. Okay, let's go to the lines.
Yes, sir. Please do. You know, I love the lines.
All right. We're going to the line. The first number is 314. The last four is 4953. Welcome to the show. You're live. You're on the Empowerment Hour with Dr. Bruce. An hour and a half now. Do you have a question or comment? You got your hand raised. Come on.
Yeah, you know, this is Pianchi. Walter Williams said Jesus doesn't exist. That's where the problem comes in. You know, during that point in time, every other male child was named Jesus because of what it meant, Savior. That was talked about by Ishmael Barashango out of Philadelphia in his lectures. In the New Testament, Jesus is white. That's what the people chose to do at the Council of Nicaea, which Walter Williams said. I'm going to say one other thing. Bob Marley, if you went back to his ancestors, his father was English, Syrian Jew. He was white.
That's
so
right.
So we got to tell those stories the way they really are. Not just
you know
outside.
I know that, Brother Pianchi. How you doing, Brother Pianchi?
I'm doing fine, but I heard what you said. I know you
Yeah, I know, Brother. I know, but I didn't get into all this background. I know his daddy was a white man from Scotland, as a matter of fact. You're right. I know that. And, but I won't get into it right now, but you're absolutely right about that. Maybe that's a good program for another time, you know, to talk about Bob Marley and his history, too, and to do something with reggae music, Brother Marvin. So, yeah, Brother Pianchi, right?
I like Bob Marley's music. I like his music. And as I said before, the New Testament, Jesus never is not historical, but it exists in the minds of the people that follow it. And like I
That's
said,
right.
During that period of time, every other male child born was called Yahshua because Yahshua meant Savior and they was under the oppression of the Roman occupation at the time.
That's absolutely right, Brother Pianca. Good to hear from you again, too, bro.
I'll talk to you later. Take care of yourself.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, brother.
Thank you, brother. And see, so we're getting a history lesson, right? And so the more that you listen to this show, the more those elements are going to come out with. Then you go and do the research for yourself, right? That is education.
Right.
That is knowledge. And knowledge is power as we continue to grow one another, right? It's not about a competition. It's about education and edification. We're going to have to grow each other. We're going to have our differences of opinion, which is okay. And then we're going to have to educate ourselves, right, and continue to grow and become the best people that we can be today and every day. Going back to the lines, Dr. Bruce, thank you, Brother Pianchi. The next
number is.
All right. Let's go on over to, can't see that number right now. It's 1286, 1286, you're next, you're live, you're on, you have a question or comment. 1286, that's your number, talk to me. You ain't talking, just say, I ain't talking to you. I'm listening.
Hello, hello?
1286, go on once. Hey, come on, welcome in. How you doing, sir?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Come on in.
Oh, yeah. This is Norman. I'm calling from Toronto, Canada.
Oh.
Norman from Toronto. Welcome, sir.
I'd like to thank Bruce. He wanted me to call in, but you're talking about Wilmington, Delaware. Bob Marley was living in Wilmington, Delaware, and he got drafted. And he went back to Jamaica, but he was actually living with his mother in Wilmington, Delaware. He was working at a Chrysler plant, and he wrote the song Night Shift. He was a member of the UAW, and he wrote the song Night Shift.
That's
he wrote
right.
the song working on the night shift with forklift.
Yeah,
he was living
in
Wilmington, Delaware. And,
you know
Wilmington,
know,
Delaware. I'm sorry.
I'm just so glad you called in. Yes, sir, I'm very familiar. Go ahead. You're right.
And, you know, Bob was living in, and he went back to Jamaica, but otherwise he was living in the United States with his mother. And the he was drafted and refused to go fight in Vietnam and went back home. And I guess
so he fled to Jamaica, huh?
The rest of the he went back to Jamaica, right.
Now, Brother Marvin, Brother Norman, can you give our listeners your program? You mind some new listeners? Can you tell them how they can listen to your program tomorrow?
Yes, sir. I do a show on Black Power 96 out of St. Petersburg, Florida. Not St. Petersburg, Russia, but St. Petersburg, Florida. And I do a show called Diasporic Music. And, you know, I play... I do a 2-hour show, and I do music and spoken words. And you will be a guest on tomorrow's show. We'll be talking to you about.
Okay. How does a person get you? How do they tune into your program?
Yeah, we got to get that information.
Is he still there?
Still
he's
here.
Calling from Kansas. Calling from Kansas, so I don't know. Can you get him, Brother Marvin?
Yeah, let's see if we can get that last number back.
Yeah, I was trying to see how we could how you listen.
Yeah, I think we got him. Are you there, sir?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Got you back. All right, tell us, listeners, how we can tune into your show.
You can go to the Internet, and you can go into blackpower96.3.org. I'm on
okay,
from 2 to 4.
All right,
yeah,
Peter, real
four.
Slow once again.
Blackpower96.3.org. Blackpower96.3.org.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for joining us.
I play from everything from Bernie Spear to Bessie Smith and I cover the waterfront. You know, I go from Hank Aaron to Chaka and the Zulus.
Okay. BlackPower96.org, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. 2 o'clock?
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. Two to four. Yes, sir.
Okay. That's tomorrow.
Right.
Okay.
See if we can tune in and support our brother as we continue to empower our people. It's the network growing. Toronto, thank you for calling. All right. Dr. Bruce, let's continue to go back to the lines again. What's the next number? 3347. 3347. You're up next. You're live. You have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce. 3347. Talk to me. Going once. Going twice. All right. Guess they're listening today. And it's okay. All right. Let's go to the next number. 5416. 5416. Welcome to the show. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce? Welcome to the Empowerment Hour. 5416. Talk to me.
Amen. Your program is always expansive, Brother Marvin. And
Brother John.
Who bring to the program are always so enlightening. I'm like, I went to another type of college, right? You don't give that, they didn't have that black, I hate to say black knowledge, but that's just pure knowledge itself, to kind of know yourself, free your mind, and the rest of you will follow.
I'm glad you liked it, brother. I'm glad you liked it and got something from what you know. I'm glad you got something from what I had to say.
It is just empowering. I'm like, I want to go back to school and sit in his class. You know? Hey, man.
You know,
I've been with you for 40 plus years, but it was like I missed a whole lot. I got certified to say I had a little bit of knowledge. I had almost like 1% when I listened to what I hear on your program, man. It is so powerful and so empowering.
You know what, brother? I'm glad you said that, because I'm glad you got something out of what I had to say. And you make me think about another point as I tell my story. Oftentimes, my classes would be filled with a lot of students, and that would take students from other professors who would be teaching the same course or even teaching other courses that would want to take my class. And what would happen is, it's almost like you get to know the teachers that the students really learning from, and where they stay awake and they become aware. Those are the classes that most students sign up for. And I really don't like to say what I'm about to say, but I really do think that some of the professors became somewhat, for lack of a better word at this point, a little jealous of the fact that my classes would always be full and students would leave my classes and would be excited. But what really happened is what I talked about earlier. Students would leave my classes, go to other classes, and because of the knowledge they got from me, would sometimes supersede or be above the heads of other professors. It would cause a conflict sometimes, and that's really what happened.
You're right.
And it reminds me of what happened when you studied the history of Socrates. Yes, Socrates, when he began to teach the boys who were in his classes, they began to challenge the Greek the Greek society at the time. And so, if you recall, if you study the history of Socrates, he was exiled and sent off to an island or somewhere, teaching what they considered to be knowledge that would be in conflict or in contradiction to what was going on in the society. And as I think about it, and I've never thought about this before, but that's what actually happened to me. By me teaching something that was not out of the ordinary and that was different and was causing students to question other things that they were hearing, and it kind of upset that whole system that I was a part of, so I was exiled. I had to go somewhere else or go hire this man because of this, because of that. So, whenever you begin, and not just in this case, but even in this system, when we in the 60s began to question the system and fought for black studies programs around the country, African-American young men like Stokely Carmichael and young men like Huey P. Newton and young women like Sister Kathleen Cleaver and sisters like Angela Davis, when they began to stand up and to speak out against this system, then what happens? Assata Shakur is somewhere in Cuba, can't come back. What happened to Eldridge Cleaver? What happened to Huey? He had to flee and go to Cuba. What happened to Bobby Seale? What happened to Geronimo Pratt? Whenever you begin to question an oppressive system or a system that's trying to keep a particular form of knowledge in existence, when you begin to question it and knock down some of the lies and falsehoods, then you're not going to be popular in that system. So the brother's right. Thank you, brother, for your call. I'm glad you're learning. That Brother Martin makes me feel good. He says he's learning. So
all right.
He always told me that.
That's what we need.
Absolutely.
We got our
Absolutely.
Online classroom, Brother
wanna,
John.
Just,
you are sitting
I want to follow up. Yeah, because they would say that they said giving you superior knowledge, and they're not giving you superior knowledge. But you need to study to show yourself approved. You were mentioned that earlier. Study to show yourself approved, knowing the word that God has sent, and that supersedes all of the rest of this little book knowledge. That's a dollar. Some of
all
that
right.
book knowledge is dollar and cents, if you know what I mean. They just put it up there so they get their people can make some money. But, you know, you need to go to a higher level. Commit yourself
right.
to a higher level, you'll be better off. Thank you. I'm going to end it with that, Marvin. Thank you, man, for giving me the time.
All right. Thank you, Brother John. And, again, our prayers are with you and your family. And you know we're always here for you, we family, on in every way we can. And, again, blessings and prayers to you, Brother John. We're standing with you
Thank
and
you,
your
brother.
Family at this time.
Thank you.
All right. All right, that's Brother John Taylor. Brother John Taylor just lost his brother this week, and he's still tuning into the show. So we're going to pray for his family that they continue to heal and be comforted through this time of bereavement. Again, we love you, and stay strong, brother. Stay strong. All right, let's go to the next number. 9282. It's Empowerment Saturday. Dr. Bruce, 845-277-9250. 9282. Welcome to the show.
Yes.
What you got for me?
Yes. Yes, sir, my brothers. I want to say peace to all the brothers and sisters with the sound of my voice, and to my brother John Taylor. John, just John, understand me. Peace be with you and the family, brother. We're here. I just want to, as always, echo what Dr. Bruce been talking about, and I want to focus on recapturing that African mind. And you know, I've been realizing myself recently that as a people, we truly don't understand what happened to us on the plantation. We don't. We really don't understand that, what happened to us on the plantation. And I put something on Facebook the other day about a quote I got from this white man, Henry Barry is his name, and he gave this quote in this speech on it to the Virginia delegation, House of Delegations in 1832. Right around the time Nat Turner was running around killing white folks, okay? And I'm not going to, when we talk about this later on the show, when I'm your guest, I'm going to explain what I think he's talking about. But what he said to the House of Delegates at this time, he said, "We have, as far as possible, closed every avenue by which the light may enter the slave's mind. If we could extinguish the capacity to see the light, our work will be complete. They would then be on the level of the beasts of the fields, and we then should be safe," meaning white folk would be safe. He's saying, in other words, we're working on, and we've been working for a couple of hundred years now, to close every avenue by which the light man and the slave's mind. But he also said, we're not there yet. As far as possible, that's what we're working on. We're not there yet. That's why these niggas still running around killing white people like Nat Turner. And then Malviz and them were some 10 years earlier. If we could extinguish the capacity for them to see the light, our work or the knowledge will be complete. They would then be on the level of the beasts of the fields, and we then should
be safe. We got to understand what that white man said that day. Because, see, 31 years after he said it, the Emancipation Proclamation. And so that says to me, some 31, 32 years later, they're now saying, we have done this. We have completed our goal. We now have our niggas like the level of the beast on the field. And now we can be safe. So now we can let them go off the plantation. Because they ain't going to do nothing but what we want them to do, what we have conditioned them to do, because they know nothing other than what we tell them. They're going to be what we want them to be. And it becomes like old McDonald's farm. But I want us to think about that, brother. Henry Berry, what he said before the House of Delegates in Virginia in 1832. They wanted to put an end to Negroes acting like Nat Turner. And since Nat, between Nat and the time of Emancipation Proclamation, there was not another black uprising like Nat Turner's, where they running around killing white folks. Not a one that I know of. Because Harriet Tubman didn't come along, I think, until 1849 when she escaped from her plantation up in Maryland. But the Underground Railroad was a peaceful thing just to get black folk out of the South into the North to so-called freedom. It wasn't going around killing white folk like Nat and them knocking them dead. That ended. So with the Emancipation Proclamation, 31, 32 years later, we now done, in my opinion, we done what Henry Berry said we needed to do, if possible. Close every avenue by which light may enter the slave's mind. Extinguish the capacity for them to see the light and the knowledge, and our work will be complete, and we shall be safe. Mm. That's what we need to understand, brother, and talk about, think about. Get to really understand what happened to us on the plantation. Because in their minds, we like the beasts on the fields.
All right. Thank you, brother. We are
Thank
down
you,
the light.
Thank you, brother.
We are down the light. The light is back on, and we are trying to empower our people every day. Again, it's recapturing the African mind right here on African American Empowerment Saturday. It's the work that needs to be done. The systems have been put in place, and now it's time for us to do the work of redefining and reclaiming ourselves each day and every day, one day at a time. Let's go to the next call. Thank you, brother. 0673, you're up next, you're live, you're on, do you have a question or comment? Welcome to the show.
I have a comment, it's Kevlon, I got a comment.
Hey,
I want to extend my condolences to Council, yeah, I'm doing fine, brother. I want to extend my condolences to Council John as well. And I got a comment. Thomas Jefferson, in the original draft of the Declaration of Independence, condemned King George for imposing slavery on American colonists. However, he struck that clause because how could he condemn King George for slavery? He was going to have slavery also. Also, in the 13th Amendment, slavery isn't completely abolished. It says, and I quote, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as a punishment for a crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. So we talk about independence. We talk about liberation. We need to work towards call for that clause to be struck, because what that clause does is allow for private businesses to get free labor.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we need to work on. So those two I want to bring out. And also, I'm surprised a lot of people don't know that the Declaration of Independence and U.S. Constitution is two separate documents. So we need to be politically astute, and that's why I love what Bruce Bridges and others have brought to the program. I turn control back to you, Brother Marvin.
Thank you, Brother Kevlon. You're exactly right. We have to become political. We have to understand these systems, how to navigate these systems every day that we're functioning so that we can become excellent examples and users, utilizers of the system to benefit us as we continue to grow ourselves and resurrect ourselves. All right, let's go back to the lines, and let's go to the next number. 7789, you're live, you're on next. Do you have a question or comment or statement for Dr. Bruce?
I'm enjoying the show. I'm just listening.
All right. Thank you for calling, and thank you for listening. It's a lot to learn and a lot to listen to, so we thank you for joining us, and keep on listening, sister. We appreciate you. All right. Dr. Bruce.
Yes, sir.
All right. So before we close out today's show, I want to get a piece of information from you. You mentioned that you were sharing the knowledge and the information to the students, and they cut you off, put you out to university and tell you don't come back. Right? How did that, one, make you feel? And two, what does that knowledge and information do to our young people when they're exposed to it at that age and at that level?
It's good to have, but you have to be mindful of how you use that knowledge and how you use this new understanding that you have, because many of our people will take it and run with it and not really know how to hand it to other people. As a matter of fact, I'm using myself as an example. We're still on our mission, telling our story. I remember how I go back to sometimes now and listen to some of the lectures that I gave on my radio program, which I'm trying to work on now to get transcribed to put into another book, the lectures. I noticed when listening to some of my old CD radio programs, the way that I said things to people, the tone of my voice, I was totally cutting, boom, boom, slash. Because I had just gotten this knowledge, and I was wanting people to have it so much and wanting to share it because it was good to me, and I knew it would be good to them. But oftentimes, people are not ready for it. And when they're not ready for it, they won't receive it. There are certain people who could listen to your program and who might be listening right now, Brother Marvin, for the first time. But if they're not ready, they're not going to receive the knowledge. The earth has to be ready to receive a particular seed in order for that seed to grow and for that seed to develop. That's the way it has to happen. It has to have the proper rain, the proper sunshine, the proper nutrients from the air and the other surrounding elements of nature in order for a seed of corn or carrots or whatever to grow. It has to be in an opportune situation in order for it to grow. And many of our people today don't want this knowledge. Their minds are not open. And so I learned as part of my odyssey to just back up. If they don't want to hear it, just leave them alone. And maybe one day they'll come back and say, what was that you were telling me the other day? Or what is it you were telling me about Halloween and the origins of Halloween and how it did or did not relate to black people? Maybe they'll wake up at some point. But, Brother Marvin, they have to be ready to receive it. If they're not ready, it's almost like water that's hitting cement. It's not going to grow. So
all right.
It has to be, we have to be, as they say, a parachute works only when it's open. And the mind is the same way. It has to be open in order for it to work, in the same way that a parachute has to be open in order for it to work. So we have to be open-minded.
All right.
Many of our people are not. So I learned to, because I used to try to push it on people. Any way I possibly could, just push. But if they don't want it now, I back up. Hey, sorry, brother, didn't mean to try to wake you up and tell you about that Easter bunny. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to try to make you understand where the green grass and the straw and the basket come from and what they symbolize. I didn't mean to do it. I apologize, you know, didn't mean the harm. And then move on, because you've been beating your head against the wall. It makes no sense. Forgive them. Go ahead. Thanks, Brother Marvin. I enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Again, wonderful show. Knowledge is power. Education
is
ours.
Don't forget tomorrow. 2 o'clock tomorrow. You want to announce that?
Yeah. 2 o'clock tomorrow. I don't have that information in front of me, but if you was taking notes, if you don't get it, go back to our on-demand. It's always out there. Blog Talk Radio.
Black Power.
You'll find it. All you got to do is Black Power Radio.
Black Power 96.
30 seconds left. So until next week, thank you, Dr. Bruce. Again, empowerment is yours. Brother John, we're praying for you. Keep listening. Keep showing up. Keep shining. It's all ours now. All we got to do is grab it. Until next week, peace and blessings. Don't forget who you are. Love you. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.